Next on our agenda, we have approval of the minutes of our meetings from June 20th through June 22nd and our July 27 meetings. Judge So moves approval. I hear a second.
Second.
Second by Judge Rosenberg. Any comment? Hearing none. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Matter carries. Next, following our traditional agenda of Judicial Council meetings, is my regular report on activities since our last meeting in July. But first, before I launch into that, I'd like to welcome the 9 incoming members of the Judicial Council, whose term is beginning in September, who are with us at this session as observers. They also attended the new Judicial Council member orientation yesterday, and that was taught by their peers and colleagues who they'll spend the next several years with on Judicial Council. As you know, about a third of council turns over in new memberships every year, and this practice allows for a broader participation of Judicial Council with branch leaders. And new members also bring fresh perspective to our discussion, so we welcome you. And each year, more than 400 judges and justices volunteer, as you know, to serve on the council advisory committees, the task forces, the working groups, the commissions. And they work alongside many of our justice system partners, state bar members, also experts in the field. And this is where a lot of the work that percolates up to council begins. These are where the ideas form that you see through proposals for public comment and that potentially come before the Judicial Council either as a proposal for a statewide policy or a best practice. And as we know, together, council members and these advisory committee members do not present and represent any particular constituency or viewpoint. There's no single agenda, but all share in the commitment to equal access to justice throughout the state. And working together, as you know, includes disagreeing, and it also means working together to a resolution. So as new branch leaders join the council, current members return to their day jobs, absent the Judicial Council binders, we want to acknowledge those departing Judicial Council members. This is their last meeting. We had an opportunity to briefly say goodbye to them at lunch, but I do want to mention their names on the record here. And they are the Honorable Terry Friedman, who isn't with us today, Ms. Miriam Krinsky, who is with us, the Honorable David Rubin, President of CJA, Ms. Kim Turner, the Honorable David Wesley, who couldn't be here today, and, of course, the Honorable Erica Yu. I want to have a round of applause for all the hard work you've collected. Thank you. I also want to mention the 3 current members who came in and filled less than full terms when they were first brought on and who've agreed to serve as additional terms, notwithstanding the challenges they faced in those coming into those incomplete terms. That's Justice Judith Ashman Gerst, Judge David Rosenberg, and Judge Kenneth So. Thank you for your continued commitment and service to the Judicial Council and statewide access.
No standing ovation?
After 3 years. After 3 years.
Okay.
Kick you out the door.
Since our last meeting, I've had a schedule of meetings with court leaders and legislators, as well as different appearances at public forums and before various bar organizations within California and also outside of California. I'll mention just a few highlights. In June, I had the pleasure of addressing the California District Attorneys Association Summer Conference, and I provided them with a view from the Supreme Court of California. In July, along with Jody Patel, she and I attended a conference. I attended the Conference of Chief Justices, and she attended the Conference of Court Administrators, and it was a joint conference in St. Louis, Missouri. And following many conversations with my peers at that conference, I can report that judiciaries throughout the country and the territories are all struggling with the issue of adequate funding for the court systems. I also had the pleasure of swearing in our 26th Supreme Court Clerk Administrator, our choice. That's Mr. Frank McGuire. He's already begun taking up many of the positions and responsibilities on the advisory committees that had previously been occupied by Fritz Ulrich, our former colleague. I also humbly say that we poached Frank McGuire from the first DCA. In August, I was humbled to be honored by the ABA Commission on Women in the Profession with the Margaret Brent Women Lawyers of Achievement Award. And on the education front, I had the pleasure of joining our new judges at the Witkin College. I delivered the trainer lecture. I was also recently a panelist with Justice Maria Rivera and some other leading lawyers of the Bay Area at a Bar Association of San Francisco Mentoring Women Lawyers event. And most recently, I had the pleasure of visiting three local courts and interacting with the judges, the staff, and the bar. That was in El Dorado County, Stanislaus County, and Napa County. Jody Patel was able to accompany me on most of those visits. I enjoyed my time with those judges and staff. We had a great behind-the-doors discussion and interchange of information. Also had an opportunity to converse with the Bar Association to talk about their needs and how they see the judicial branch. And also, I have to say, I'm quite impressed with all three courts and what they're doing to meet these devastating cuts to the branch. I also want to thank the bar associations that made those visits possible and practical. Finally, I want to commend Justice Brad Hill, who is chair of JRWG, which is Judicial Recruitment and Retention Working Group, as well as Judge David Rubin, president of CJA, and also staff at the AOC, that's Kurt Child and Tracy Kenny, as well as staff at CJA, Mike Belote, for their year-long effort in addressing judicial pensions. And most recently, adding to this great team, I want to commend the following people for their work in the last few days and week, really, in trying to get a handle on the fast-moving and largely conceptual pension refund reform. And those are Presiding Judge Rosenberg, Presiding Judge Edmund, as well as Justice Miller, as well as Jody Patel, as well as Judge Jarre. A number of people came together at a time when things were fast moving to get in and talk to the right people about the pension plan. And as you saw, the joint press release by CJA and the Judicial Council, we understand certain things about that bill. We're waiting to hear more. And, of course, you could read in the paper what the speaker said today about his intent and that body's intent in passing that legislation to avoid impact on current sitting judges. So that's a great example of collaboration, long-term, the last minute, delivering tremendous results. So in a nutshell, that concludes my report. Next, we'll hear from Jody Patel, the interim director of the AOC.
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon. You have my written report, should be in your package, but there's just a couple of activities that I wanted to highlight for you. For the first time, included within the administrative director's report, is a AOC staffing component. I believe it should be at the beginning of the report that you already have, and it will reflect that at the end of July that we at the AOC currently have 837 staff. And this is information that we will continue to update the council on from here on forward, and in the future our plan is to also add some budgetary information so that we have the council fully informed with regard to where the AOC stands from a resource perspective. You may have also seen an article, I believe it was in the Daily Journal about a week ago, that talked a little bit about our space reduction activity here at the AOC. And not to repeat what was in that article, but as a result of some space consolidation and elimination of space and subleasing space, a significant amount in this facility here, it equates to an entire floor, the seventh floor, as well as two-thirds of the eighth floor, all of which will take place within the next 6 months. We will have achieved just under a 30% rent reduction, at the AOC that will allow us to continue to support AOC operations and services on behalf of the council, the courts, as well as the public. I had the pleasure a couple of weeks ago, along with Judge Rubin from CJA, as well as Judge Kaufman, who is liaison to the Lassen Superior Court, who had their grand opening ceremony of a newly constructed three-courtroom courthouse. Beautiful facility. This is a project that was completed with our the assistance of our Office of Court Construction and Management. It was completed under budget, and I believe the court is extremely pleased with this incredible facility, and Judge Kaufman and Judge Rubin can chime in on that, but it was absolutely stunning, and I appreciated the opportunity to go there. In terms of some good news, the California Courts Protective Order Registry, I believe the council is aware that we have deployed this system to 21 counties. We recently entered into an MOU with the Department of Justice, who is providing grant funding to allow us to expand that protective order registry to 10 additional courts by during the course of this fiscal year. So we should have that completed by the end of this fiscal year. So those are just a few of my updates, and the remainder of the update is in my written report. And I know you're going to hear a lot more about some of the other changes that will be occurring here at the AOC tomorrow in your public meeting. So thank you.
Thank you, Jody. We'll hear from Justice Baxter, Chair of PCLC.
Thank you, Chief. The Policy Committee has met four times since my last report to the Council at its June 22nd meeting. Once in June, once again in July, and twice in August, and we took positions on behalf of the Judicial Council on six separate pieces of legislation. At its June 28th meeting, the Policy Committee revisited AB 2442, which creates the California Hope Public Trust, which would have had the ability to take control of state-owned property, including judicial branch property. And after opposing the bill, ultimately, after a number of subsequent discussions on the matter, we ended up taking a neutral position when the author agreed to amend the bill to exempt the vast majority of judicial branch property from the reach of the bill. And at the same meeting in June, the Policy Committee took an opposed position on AB 1913, which would authorize persons on post-release community supervision to apply for bail. And during the pendency of court revocation proceedings, among other things, and ultimately, that bill was held in the Senate Appropriations Committee, and I'm pleased to say it is not moving forward. Additionally, at this meeting, an update on the status of mortgage foreclosure bills and the budget was provided as an information matter. At the July 26th meeting, an informational update was provided on a potential proposal arising out of Fresno, relating to video appearances in traffic and truancy matters to address the closures of seven Fresno branch courts. And also an overview was provided on SB 210 relating to release of certain defendants on their own recognizance. At its August 16th meeting, the Policy Committee took an opposed position on SB 210 on the ground that the bill is unnecessary, creates additional work for the courts, and inadvertently creates grounds for review of a court's bail determination. The committee also considered AB 2076, relating to fees for court reporter services, which the committee previously acted on at its April 12 and June 14th meetings. The policy committee acted to support the cleanup to the budget trailer bill language regarding the fee for court reporter services lasting less than 1 hour, and took no action on the remainder of the bill because the bill's procedural posture at the time did not necessitate a position on the remainder. The committee also voted to take no position on AB 1875 related to time limits for depositions in certain civil matters. And at the August 27th meeting, the committee acted to take no position on SB 1186 relating to early evaluation conferences in access-related disability lawsuits. Finally, the governor signed into law the following Judicial Council-sponsored measures: Senate Bill 1574 regarding e-discovery, and Assembly Bill 2683 relating to notice to creditors in claims regarding decedent's estates. Tomorrow is the last day of the 2011-12 legislative session. The governor will have until September 30th to sign or veto bills that are sent to him. And that completes my report, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. We'll hear next from Justice Miller, Executive and Planning.
Thank you, Chief. The Executive and Planning Committee has met 11 times since the council meeting sat in regular session on June 22nd, in person on August 9th, by video on August 21st, by email 6 times, and by telephone 3 times. In the course of those meetings, the committee set the council's agenda for the July 27th and the August 30th and 31st council meetings, and also approved the reports as ready for council consideration. The committee reviewed the Strategic Evaluation Committee report and the hundreds of comments that we received at both of its two-day meetings, both on August 9th and by video on August 21st, and we will have those recommendations for the council at our meeting tomorrow. They appear as item J. Also, at the video conference meeting, the committee had received several hundred nominations for appointment to the council's advisory committees, and we reviewed those, and we have made recommendations to the Chief Justice for her consideration in that appointment and selection process. The committee selected a judicial nominee to serve on the Board of State and Community Corrections to succeed Judge Jarr, who the council appointed, if you remember, at its June meeting, but who resigned from the BSCC in early August so that he could take this new position as administrative director. The committee, as you see in your consent items for tomorrow, the committee recommends that the council appoint Judge William R. Pounders, retired, to that board. He's a retired L.A. Superior Court judge, and that'll be item H on the agenda tomorrow. Also, I'd just like to take a moment and indicate that tomorrow morning we will hear from 5 council members as part of item I, which is the first agenda item for tomorrow morning, and they will report on their ongoing activities and our ongoing responsibilities as liaison members to both trial courts and to the AOC. That's been part of our outreach efforts to the trial courts and also our educational aspect to oversee and learn about information concerning the AOC divisions. And as all of you know, you've been assigned to different aspects of that. The first program, which is to the trial courts, allows, we believe, for increasing that transparency that needs to take place so that the local courts know more about and have an access to information about the council and the policies, and then also for accountability for the council to the courts. And we will hear from council members tomorrow with regards to visits to 16 different courts during the past few months. They will also provide information to us about their role with regards to the AOC and the support that that provides to the council for the development of policy and how those policies are implemented and the direction that takes place in that regards. And they will make those reports at our meeting tomorrow morning. And that is the report for executive and planning.
Thank you, Justice Miller. Next, we'll hear from Justice Hull from Rules and Projects.
Thank you, Chief. In light of Justice Miller's report concerning E&P, where they have met 11 times since the last meeting, it gives me some pause to report that we have met once.
We're meeting three times a minute.
On July the 27th. We have, however, been doing a lot of thinking and a lot of planning. The Rules and Projects Committee met during the lunch break, chaired by Judge Yu of the July 27th council meeting, to review proposed revisions to the criminal jury instructions. The Rules and Projects Committee recommends approval of this proposal, which is item E on today's consent agenda. RuPro, the Rules and Projects Committee, is preparing for a series of telephone meetings on September 6th, 10th, and 12th. On those days, the Rules and Projects Committee will consider 26 rule and form proposals that circulated for public comment during the spring cycle and one technical rule amendment that did not circulate for comment. If recommended for approval, the proposals are expected to come before the council at the October 26th business meeting. I should add that we are making every effort to do this year what we did last year and substantially limit the rules and form proposals, largely confined to those that are required by statute or to conform to the law. In addition, the Rules and Projects Committee will review and discuss suggestions from advisory groups and some individual members of advisory groups for changes to rules and forms that could result in significant cost savings or efficiencies for the courts, including suspension or repeal of certain rules. Possible changes, as I've noted, would include the revision of rules or forms, the suspension of rules, or the outright repeal of rules. The Rules and Projects Committee asked advisory committees to submit ideas for changes that would provide quick, effective relief for the courts. And the committee has received responses from six advisory groups thus far: the Appellate Advisory Committee, the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee, the Criminal Law Advisory Committee, the Elkins Family Law Implementation Task Force, the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, and the Probate and Mental Health Advisory Committee, plus some courts, including the Los Angeles County Superior Court. And we look forward to a thoughtful and productive discussion of those suggestions at the upcoming meeting. And I should add also that we intend to go beyond simply those committees and task forces for which we have supervision and intend this fall to reach to the trial courts and the court executive officers for whatever ideas that they might have on the same subject. In any event, I'll report on the outcome of RuPro's consideration of those suggestions at the next council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Judge Herman on the Technology Committee.
Thank you, Chief. I want to start out by really throwing out some thank yous to some extremely dedicated staffers, Jody and Kurt Sutherland, of course, and Mark Dissman, the Director of the Information Services Division of the AOC, Renee Hatcher, Virginia Sanders Hines, Jessica Craven, all of whom have provided extreme support in a very stressful period of downsizing and other issues since the March meeting and since the June meeting. I also want to thank Les Butler, who is no longer with us and who chaired the Project Management Office for the CCMS project, and wish him well. Any guesses about where he's ended up?
Orange County.
Not Orange County. Tyler Technologies.
Minnesota.
A name you may be familiar with. No. Is a case management vendor who's one of the vendors that courts are looking at here in California, and he's been able to join his family in Atlanta, and that's been a long period of time since he was able to live with his family. So we send our best wishes to him. The Technology Committee, the Judicial Branch Technology Initiatives Working Group, chaired by Judge Moss, we have over the course of since the June meeting, I met with many of the stakeholders in technology, the court executive officers, information technology leaders, the steering committee for judicial branch technology initiatives working group, and we continue to meet on a regular basis. And I'll just give you some of the highlights of the interaction we've had with the various technology stakeholders. The technology committee has met four times telephonically since our June meeting, and we just had an in-person meeting this morning. I meet weekly along with Vice Chair Justice Ashman Gerst, Judge Moss, who chairs the Technology Initiatives Working Group, Judge Kaufman, previous vice chair, as well as key members of staff, to keep a weekly update in terms of the progress of technology issues within the branch. We also meet regularly with the steering committee, for Judge Moss's group, as well as the full group. The committee is collaborating with other committees and groups related to technology, including the Sustain Users Groups that's plotting where they might move in the future in terms of leveraging their relationship with Sustain. There was an intensive effort at the end of June and early July around leveraging the external components of CCMS, and this effort was halted due to funding restrictions by the legislature. And we've also been finalizing and accepted the results of the Trial Court Technology Needs Survey. Judge Moss, who, as I said, chairs the Judicial Branch Technology Initiatives Working Group, distributed an announcement to all of the presiding judges, court executive officers, court IT officers, requesting participation in four technology-identified work streams. These work streams were identified in conjunction with trial court information technology managers and included short-term critical technology needs projects for the judicial branch that are already in progress, being planned, or need to be addressed. And the work streams include the technology vision and roadmap, the CCMS V2, V3 maintenance issues relative to the V2, V3 courts, case management request for proposal, that is a master request for proposal, and e-filing, electronic filing. 15 courts and the AOC with over 30 volunteers are actively participating in these work streams. In late June and early July, there was extensive work related to leveraging the external components of CCMS, and a total of 45 volunteers from 31 courts and 14 from the AOC participated in that effort. There was the creation and stand-up of the e-filing working group, which will assist the council by making recommendations concerning uniform rules on the electronic filing and service of documents in the trial courts. And the focus of this working group efforts will be on Assembly Bill 2073. AB 2073 was a bill that was brought by Orange County in order to authorize courts to mandate e-filing. And we worked with the author on that particular bill, and Orange County will be the pilot court for e-filing. In the meantime, the legislature has directed us to report back within 18 months and to prepare rules that relate to mandatory e-filing at the discretion of individual trial courts. That effort is well on its way down the pike. Justice Berniers will chair that committee, and in order to make sure that that committee is closely linked with the technology group, I will act as the vice chair of that committee. The court technology needs survey, the results of the trial court technology needs survey, and that was a survey that was proposed by Judge O'Malley, has been distributed to presiding judges and court executive officers with the results of 51 courts that responded by August 6th. And this survey is really a template in terms of the go-forward operations and goals of the technology committee. In terms of the results of that survey, six courts have urgent case management system needs, indicating a need to replace their case management systems within 12 months. And that's 12 months not of today, but 12 months as of the date of the survey. 22 courts will need to replace one or more case management system within the next 1 to 5 years. 16 courts are in discussions with vendors to replace their current case management systems, and 3 other courts are in the preliminary stages prior to contacting vendors. 35 courts are interested in participating in a trial court consortium to collectively negotiate contracts with private case management system vendors currently operating in California. 33 courts expressed an interest in AOC implementation assistance with e-business services. 38 courts have expressed an interest in having the AOC negotiate branch-wide license agreements. A majority of courts believe the Judicial Council should set standards for the courts, that is, technical standards for the courts and for vendors. The courts believe that the Judicial Council should determine how the funding of technology projects will be secured, which is obviously a big challenge to us in the coming year. The courts do want to be involved in the development of branch-wide technology strategy, which I think is an important feature of the working group that's chaired by Judge Moss. Electronic access and exchange of information was the service most often identified as important to stakeholders. Stakeholders meaning lawyers want e-filing, the courts themselves want and need document management and e-filing, so that is a technological priority in terms of access. The AOC is working with case management systems in San Luis Obispo, which, of course, you remember what the council provided for that court in terms of financing for case management at our last meeting. San Luis, as you recall, was going to be an early adopter of CCMS, and we've helped them with procurement of a new system. They developed a request for proposal and case management requirements that can be used by any court. Four vendors responded to the RFP, and demonstrations took place at the court on August 16th and 17th. Fresno, which has a V2 system for part of its caseload, participated in the vendor demonstrations to help San Luis Obispo and help prepare them for their upcoming case management system replacement. And San Luis Obispo, four vendors have responded to the RFP, and they're moving now onto the financing phase, and they hope to have a vendor selected by late September. One of the court-sponsored work streams is working on a branch-wide case management system RFP, which all courts can use as a template in terms of getting responses from vendors for local case management systems. On a look-forward basis, on October 24th, 2012, the Tech Committee will be hosting a technology summit. That's the day before the next council meeting, and the stakeholders that will be involved will include and won't be limited to, but will, of course, include CTAC, include representatives from court execs, from appellate e-filing, which is a committee that's chaired by Justice Ashman, here is our co-chair, as well as representatives of the Sustain User Group and other stakeholders that we interact with relative to technology. And finally, our committee will be incorporating into its work plan the recommendations from the SEC that relate to technology, many of which, by the way, have already been accomplished because many of them related to CCMS. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Herman.